Good morning and welcome to The Business of Living, the show that brings you strategies and practical solutions for managing your life and career. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. What a beautiful day we have today. It is still winter, I want to remind you that. So don't put away the winter stuff, okay? You never know. You know, I don't want to jinx things. I know everybody's looking forward to spring and summer. I'm actually more of a fall and winter kind of a guy, but we'll take it any time, right? So it seems like a lot of people are trying to wrap their minds around their finances. And, I mean, it's a good time to do it. There's a lot of economic uncertainty. There are a lot of people who either are out of work, have been out of work, or may be facing with, a situation where they're going to be out of work. And so it's a good time to really just think about the our finances, the assets maybe that we've accumulated over the years. And I know, speaking for myself, it's not something that that I've in the past had given a lot of thought to. And it was only about a year ago that I thought about looking into retaining or hiring or securing the advice or the services of a financial advisor. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Lots of questions. Are there answers? Here to help us wade through this is Veronica Dagger. She's Dow Jones Wealth Advisor. Veronica, good morning, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
So, listen, tell me first, talk to us a little bit about your background.
Right. So I'm a reporter here at Dow Jones. I've been with the company for about 5 years, been covering wealth management for about 2. I was doing some general assignment reporting before that. And my job is mostly to speak to financial advisors. So I speak to financial advisors all day long and ask them, you know, what their clients are asking about. I ask advisors what they're worried about and thinking about. And I do videos for us here, and I do some other media, and I write, of course. And I really enjoy what I do. It's always super interesting, and it's been extra interesting, I guess, in the last year or so, because there is, as you referenced, so much uncertainty and so much unemployment still, unfortunately, that financial advisors are getting, are playing a bigger role in some people's lives. Some people are sort of straying away from it, but we can talk about that too. But finance and money is really on the top of a lot of people's minds. I know it's on the top of my mind every day.
I know several people that I'm fairly close to and that have been in the workplace for many years, a decade, 2 decades. And I know one of the things that they're faced with in particular is finding themselves unemployed. And, yep. And the people that I'm dealing with generally, they were senior managers, and so they had a nice package. But the package doesn't last forever. And I think sometimes we play games with ourselves thinking, oh, well, gee, I've got enough. Minimally, some of the people that I deal with, they're looking at about a year where they really don't have to worry about much. Sometimes maybe a little bit more than that, and sometimes maybe a little bit less than that. Mm-hmm. But whenever they come to me for advice, and I'm not a financial advisor, this is just more a career advice, and I say, well, listen, you may think you have plenty of time, but make time your friend, because it's amazing how quickly those weeks and months tick off the calendar. So my point there is that you got to be really careful about how you're managing your dollars. And maybe that's a good time also to take take assessment or a good stock in your assets.
So
talk to me a little bit about that. Give us some guidelines.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, the point about the career coaching play into this, so much of this, some of the advisors I speak to, in the past, they might just be talking to people about dollars and cents, but now a lot of them are talking career with people. And your point about people being laid off for a year or two, I mean, on the senior level, I mean, that is so true. I mean, I spoke to an advisor yesterday, and he works with guys who, investment bankers, sort of C-level type people as well. And so many of them were used to in the past, couple million dollar paychecks. And, we've all heard, Wall Street compensation has been cut. and some of these guys are you know, out of work, and they're just waiting for the next position. They're just waiting for another banking position or another C-level type of position. And a year goes by, 2 years goes by, and their savings is like, you know, severely depleted, even though they have a ton of money. And so some of the advisors are saying to them, you know, if these jobs that once existed may not ever come back, you may not be able to earn what you used to earn. And so you need to reconsider your career. You need to reconsider maybe there's some other field you can go into, and think about that. Think about what your options are. And that's hard. That's hard for someone who's been in such a high level, in such a sort of a power broker position. You're used to making a certain amount of money. You're also used to having, you know, a certain lifestyle, you know, and I think that goes into your point. You have to, a lot of the advisors, and they've been saying this for a while, and they're still saying it. I mean, we got more jobs numbers today, and it just shows that, you know, jobless claims rose again, and there's still, you know, a lot of uncertainty. The recovery is, you know, still very uneven. You know, so there's that backdrop, and there's that fear. But a lot of these advisors have been saying for a long time, no matter how much money you're making, first thing is you really need to be thinking about budgeting. You really need, and it sounds so simple and obvious and pedestrian, but the thing is, you know, you really need to be thinking about what your expenses are, what you're spending your money on.
I'm glad you touched on that, because, mm-hmm. you know, here we are broadcasting from the hedge fund capital of the world,
right.
Practically Greenwich, Connecticut. And in addition to that, we also have many very senior level, you know, C-level executives, you know, corporate executives, and you're absolutely right. They have, and this is not a criticism at all. It's just a fact of life that no matter what our income is, we have these add-ons, and whether it's extra vacations, you know, nice cars, second homes, putting our kids through private schools, et cetera. And you're right. It's time to take stock as to, okay, what are our expenditures. Now, I'm not part of the 1% crowd.
Me either. I wish I was.
But I remember.
I have no problem with the 1%.
Quite a few years ago. Yeah, I aspire to become a 1%er.
Right.
But quite a few years ago, when I was in between jobs, I remember I knew things started getting serious. My wife, Catherine, is actually very good at budgeting and adapting to changes. And actually, I've worked on with my own consulting practice for many years, and that fluctuates. It's not a steady predictable stream. So she's been very good. But I remember one time I went into the refrigerator to grab some orange juice, and my favorite, I'm sorry, this is not necessarily an advertisement, but it could be, Tropicana. And I looked in there and I thought, oh my gosh, we've gone from Tropicana to some, you know, some generic brand. And then it went from that to frozen orange juice. I thought, okay, I really, the heat, I need to get back to the Tropicana standard. So anyway, just about a year or so ago, we did bring in a financial advisor. But again, I'm not an expert. And if you've never done that before, what I was surprised at as we were beginning to kind of, you know, pull on that thread and try to, you know, find somebody. Number one, I found that there's a lot of people out there. Number two, they don't all work in the same way. I was wondering if you could just speak to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's all different types. You know, there's people who work, you know, sort of big brokerage houses who, you know, work on some combination. Usually a commission plays into that. There's people who are fee-only. A lot more and more advisors are going into that model. There's people who just, you know, charge a flat fee. There's some people who will custody your assets, or you basically you'll move your investments over into their platform, so to speak. There's other people who just do financial plans, like certified financial planners. There's a real variety of shapes and sizes of advisors. You know, there's, you know, the big, like I said, there's big brokerage houses. There's sort of one or two man or woman shops. variety of services and offerings also vary. I mean, some companies are better at certain things. You know, if you're really a high-level investor, you know, you're probably not going to go around the corner to a mom-and-pop shop if you, you know, if you need help with your foreign currency or you want to. So those are some considerations. So there is a wide variety. There's also a wide variety of experience levels I've found, and also knowledge levels in terms of the advisors. That varies greatly. I mean, and it's not necessarily, I mean, sometimes it's years in the business. Obviously, that's always going to affect someone's knowledge level, but that's not always the best indication either. I've met some really savvy young people as well.
Well, actually, 15 years ago when we first started thinking about, you know, looking into a financial advisor, there was a young couple, you know, newly married. They came to meet with us. Actually, they sought us out. They were, I guess, as part of a marketing campaign. We mm-hmm. thought, well, you know, it wouldn't hurt us to have about an hour chat. And so a couple of quick questions. I quickly realized that I became I was very nervous about the fact that, you know, neither of them had any real assets of their own. So I'm thinking, so you're going to give me advice. You know, you don't own a home. You don't have stocks. You don't have,
So
I'm wondering, back to some of the guidelines. Are there some overall guidelines as to, first of all, is it based in terms of who you're looking for? And you gave a couple of ideas. A commission versus fee, and does it depend mm-hmm. on where we are in our stage of life? Does it depend on how much assets or the variety of assets that we have? So go ahead, I'll
right.
stop.
Yeah, in terms of stage of life, yeah, I mean, some advisors won't work with you unless you have a certain amount of money. So, you know, and they'll tell you that, you know, they'll have a minimum. Some of them will have a minimum. Some of them won't. I mean, many advisors I speak to tend to go after a certain threshold of assets, you know, whether it's $1 million or something. But there's also tons of advisors out there that work mm-hmm. with that, that are increasingly working with us, the more average middle market type of thing. In terms of, you know, checking an advisor out, I mean, I'm always a big fan of referrals. I mean, one of most advisors get their new clients through referrals anyway, but I always like to, you know, ask, you know, people their experience with an advisor, you know, in terms of finding somebody. I think it's also important to interview, like anything, and maybe some people do this with other professions. I'm trying to think of what, I was going to say with doctors, but maybe necessarily not. But I think it's important if you have like a list of advisors you're thinking of going with, you know, why not meet with, you know, two or three or five of them and see which one you feel, you know, part of it's sort of qualitative connection. You know, how do you feel about them? What's your sense about them? What can they offer you? And many of these people will do a free, you know, first meeting. You know, it may not be, obviously it's not going to be an in-depth analysis, mm-hmm. but we'll be happy to meet with you and, you know, sort of pitch for your business. Another thing, if they are a registered broker, there is a website, if you Google it, it's BrokerCheck, FINRA BrokerCheck, and you can check out these people's backgrounds to see if there is, you know, you just want to make sure everyone has a clean record, essentially.
And would it share a little bit about their credentials as well?
Yeah, exactly. Their licensing, what states they're licensed in, you know, if there's any violations on their record type of thing. So that's something to check out for people. So that's one thing to keep in mind. You know, and also basic, you know, like Google searches, too, on people. I think that's also can be really telling just to sort of cover your bases that way. I think it's also important in terms of meeting with that person, just sort of gauge how your initial meeting goes with them. You know, if you feel a connection with them, if you understand their, if they have an understanding of what you're trying to achieve, you know, many people will say that they don't want to be sold product, you know, clients that don't want to be sold products. So if you go in someone's office and, you know, you just kind of give your life situation and they're like, well, you know, I've got the perfect product for you. I want to sell you this. That, I mean, maybe that works for some people, you know, and maybe you're at the stage of your life where you need that. But in general, you may want to think twice.
Did you see a conflict of interest? Now, I'm assuming you're speaking more of the commission, that are more on a commission basis. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they've got to earn their money, you know, one way or the other. Do you see any kind of conflict of interest? So let's say I'm on a commission basis and I say, look, I've got the perfect, you know, investment for you. But I know also that I'm going to make out quite nicely as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that there could be a conflict for sure, you know, because it's like, how objective is this advice? If you are going to get some sort of, you know, kickback from it, I mean, I think that's maybe part of the whole backlash against Wall Street, is saying like, well, you know, where's all this advice coming from, and whose best interest really is this in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously brokers they have to do things in the best interest of clients, but that might not necessarily be what's, you know, the most suitable for them. One of the things I'm a big fan of is this fee-based certified financial planners. I think, you know, I've went to one myself, and I think they, you know, they don't work, you know, it's fee-based, so it's not commission, and certified financial planning board qualifies them. They have to go through certain testing, and, you know, it's pretty rigorous, and they have to, you know, pass a certain ethics standards and things like that. And I think there's a certain quality to them in terms of being able to give financial planning advice. I mean, obviously, it's still, you know, a variety of experience. But if you go on, there's a website called NAPFA, N as in Nancy, A, P as in Peter, NAPFA, let me Google it real quick, NAPFA.org. And if you go on NAPFA, you can do a search, and you can look for a fee-based financial planner within your neighborhood, so just within your state, and kind of drill down by zip code, I believe.
So that's N as in Nancy, A, P as in Peter, F as in Frank, A as in Andy. Actually, we're gonna come into a break in just a second. When we come back, Veronica, I'd be interested in. Again, for some people, this may seem obvious, but for others, you know, number one, trying to find the two or three people that you may want to, potential advisors that you want to have a conversation with, an initial conversation. But what are some of the, when we come back from our break, I'd love to hear some of the questions. What are some of the basic questions that you want to ask the advisor? And then what kinds of responses would you hope to hear back to help you kind of narrow the field down? So we are here speaking with Veronica Dagger, Dow Jones Wealth Advisor, and we will be right back after this break here on 1490 WGCH.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
That moment, we arrived on the scene.
The storm had nearly destroyed the area.
This was our own community. Friends, family, people we grew up with, went to school with, we were there to help.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
They made it down to the storm cellar, but the house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had chainsaws going, and we had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Right here, close to home, in my state.
It was one of those life-changing moments where I realized I am making a difference in these people's lives and mine. I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
You can serve part-time and be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Connecticut National Guard. Aired by the Connecticut Broadcasters Association and this station.
Listening to The Business of Living, the show that brings you strategies and practical solutions for managing your life and career. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. We've been speaking with Veronica Dagger. She's the Dow Jones Wealth Advisor. And just parenthetically, I should say that Veronica, I've seen a couple of your bylines, and I must say they are excellent. And now I've picked them up usually, and I think the weekend edition. Now there's so tell us. We're going to get back into the subject matter, but I'm just curious for those listening. When do you usually actually publish in the print edition?
It depends. So I'll have something coming out this Sunday in the Sunday Journal, and that's going to be a story that hopefully will be helpful for people expecting a child. In terms of set schedule, it really depends on sort of news flow and what the editors need. But in terms of the Dow Jones Newswire, I publish weekly. So,
oh, fantastic.
And our videos, our videos, you can watch them for free, and they are on WSJ.com. Is probably the best landing page to get that, to find that.
Fantastic. And Sunday sounds like it'll be very interesting. I know that when our first child came along, one of the first things, the very first things we did was we started a college fund. And guess what? Mm. My daughter goes off to college next year.
How exciting.
But, yeah. And that's the exciting part. The non-exciting part is we're not even close to having accumulated enough to get it through even the first year with the college. Well, that's another conversation, another show. Back to this whole idea of, going through this idea of, searching for the right, in quotation marks, the right financial advisor.
Right.
So let's say we do the broker check, we go to NAPFA, and maybe we talk to a couple of our friends, family, and we get a few names. But now, I love the idea of, hey, look, don't just pick the first person. Really sit down and have a conversation with maybe two or three. I don't know how many beyond that you'd want to go. But what are some good questions that someone would want to ask a potential financial advisor?
So first, I think you need to go a little bit more into their background. Ask them. A little bit like you might do with an potential, if you're on a job interview type of thing. Tell me a little bit about your background before you have the meeting. Again, you want to check out that broker check site. If they are, a stockbroker, an investment advisor, or insurance agent, you can go to, the website actually is finra.org, and you can look for their broker check. If they are an investment advisor with firms, regulated by the SEC, I believe the threshold is $25 million or more, but don't quote me on that. You can go to advisorinfo@sec.gov and do an investment advisor search to do a little bit about their background. Mm-hmm. And that will tell you a little bit about the advisors, clients and their fees and any disciplinary history. And also have them tell you a little bit about themselves. It's interesting to hear how people present themselves. Thinking about what some of the other clients say about them, you might ask the advisor themselves for recommendations of people who are clients of them and see what they say.
I like that too. Mm.
And I think it's important to do also, but I think you also have to keep in mind, though, to sort of trust your own instincts and go with your own impressions of someone, to some extent, because sometimes people's opinions obviously can be biased. We're all, we all have our opinions of folks, but in terms of questions you might ask your friend about them, how does the advisor communicate with you? How often do they speak to you? Did the advisor ever admit making a mistake? Or, how do you evaluate your goals versus, what's actually happening with your investments with that advisor? Did that advisor, ever surprise you or disappoint you? Or, just any questions about their ethical behavior? I think all those things are fair game to ask your friend or whoever referred you.
No, I think that's when we did look into this about a year ago, and it was brand new territory, as I mentioned earlier, that the first time we did it was 15 years ago. Then we just kind of sat, and over the years, things change. You start thinking about, big expenses. We moved into went from our first house to the second home, and that changed the game a little bit, And then also life insurance that we had taken out under a certain set of circumstances. And then, of course, that changed. So we brought somebody in, actually, and we did. And actually, I'm glad to hear you say, not that this is a knock against those who are on a commission structure. I mean, I think there are a lot of very, I'm sure there are a lot of very good financial advisors. But we went with a fee only. We did not want to. We did not want somebody coming in where they're thinking about, okay, how can I steer these guys into investments where, you know, again, they can also make a pretty good deal of money. We went with a fee only, and we paid about $1,500. And so we did some we asked some of those questions, and I think and you mentioned this too. I think you alluded to it. We actually ultimately made the decision based on we just trusted the guy. He was responsive. He asked good questions. He had great forms that we had filled out. And then he came back with a very detailed analysis and recommendations as to what we should be, you know, hey, you need to move some of this money in this direction. You need to up your life insurance. And they, you know, he, of course, he factors in a lot of things. What do we want? How long will I be working? Long time. And the kids going into college and et cetera, et cetera. So we actually, it turned out to be a very good experience. We did act on some of the recommendations. So I think that was your advice there, I think, is very good. Maybe not for everybody, but for for many people, if you want unbiased advice and a thorough review, that could be the way to go.
Yeah, you know, and also, you know, you were to sort of elaborate on something you said, you know, I think it's really important for the advisors to put it in writing what they're thinking in terms of a plan for you, and also to put it in writing, but also put it in a simple way, not that anyone needs it simplified, but maybe they do, you know, because you want to be able to understand what the advisor, you know, they can have the best recommendations in the world, but if they can't put it in English and in an understandable fashion where you can know what it means and okay, and now you're able to act on some of those recommendations. I think that's so important because if you don't understand what they're saying, then they could have the best advice in the world, and it's not going to help you. And
that
then
is
also
excellent, excellent advice.
And then also just to go back to the point about, you know, how the advisors get paid, you know, it's a fair question. You know, how exactly are you going to get paid on my account? And, you know, whether it's commission or fee or what have you, but I think it's okay to ask a advisor to detail exactly how they work and how their compensation is going to come from managing your money. I think if someone's shying away from answering those questions or, again, is presenting them in a confusing way, that might be some sort of red flag. I think it's also important to ask about conflicts of interest as well. You know, if they are recommending something, some sort of product, then, you know, they should let you know that. There's nothing wrong with making a recommendation. Just be, disclose it. You know, it's all about being open and transparent and disclosing. And I think that's what clients appreciate and they gravitate to as well. I think that's really important.
We've got about another minute to go, and this we may need, you know, another half an hour just for this, but is there a perfect time? Is there a right time to, in our life stage, you know, pre-kids or when we have, and maybe some people don't have that kind of a situation, but is there a perfect time to look into having a chat with a financial advisor?
I think you bring up a really good point. There is some really good times to do so, and I think it revolves around when there is a big life event, like having a kid, like getting married, like thinking about getting, you know, retirement. You know, obviously, hopefully you go to someone before you retire, but and that's usually when people tend to go to these folks, when they do have some big life event coming up. If you're going to have a kid, you want to start thinking about life insurance, and so that's one of those issues that you might need to tap an advisor for. Or if, you know, you all of a sudden combine, you know, incomes with someone else, you get married, and, you know, what does their 401k look like? What does my 401k look like? You know, what should our combined allocation look like?
And hope that that's not a deal breaker, right?
Exactly.
I could go on for a lot longer, Veronica, but thank you so much because we're just about out of time. How about a golden nugget of the day? Any parting thought?
You know, I think my parting thought, you know, is...
ABC News Now, I'm Karen Chase.
It's actually about thinking before you spend. And this is something we talked about early on, but no matter how much money you make, I think it's really important to really think through whether or not you need something or it's just a want or a need, and think before you lay out the credit card or whatever you're going to be spending money on. Give it a second thought before you lay over the cash.
Thank you so much. We've been speaking with Veronica Dagger, Dow Jones Wealth Advisor, and it is 10 o'clock straight up. Thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure, Scott.
And really appreciate it. Excellent advice. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, you only have one life. Why not live it on purpose? This is Scott Ventrella for the Business of Living Show. See you next week.
This is your community radio station, serving Lower Fairfield County and Westchester. 1490 WGCH in Greenwich.
Thanks. And the other, Under Armour, no sweat sportswear. This is ABC News.
Mike Rowe here with Jim Twitchell. Jim, what are you?
I'm a senior master technician.
You've been with Ford now for how long?
24 years, thankfully.
Jim, a lot of people hear about the works and they figure it's an oil change. It is an oil change, right?
No, Mike, it's not just an oil change.
Please proceed.
Well, it includes a brake inspection, belt and hoses check, checking your cabin filter, your air filter, tire rotation, battery test, top off all the fluids, and a multi-point inspection with a detailed report card.
All right, it certainly seems comprehensive, this works thing. What doesn't it include?
Well, that list is probably very short.
Glove compartment. You check that?
We try to stay out of your glove box.
What about my antenna?
Come see the experts at your local Ford dealer for a great value on routine service. The Works Fuel Saver Package covers everything you need for just $29.95 or less after $10 rebate. Stop by today.
If we were to sum up, you'd say the Works Fuel Saver Package includes pretty much everything for one low price.
It'll cover everything that your car needs for a scheduled maintenance service.
Up to 5 quarts oil, taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. See participating Ford dealer or visit FordOwner.com for rebate details through 3/31/12.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you weather more than 100 times a day. Gorgeous weather we're looking at on this Thursday morning. It's cool, and we're going to have a lot of sunshine today and a warm day. The high is going to be right around 65 degrees, maybe even 70 in a couple of spots. Clouds increase tonight. The low's 42. We'll have some rain starting after 9 o'clock tonight. Some rain for the early pre-dawn hours on Friday, then sunshine Friday afternoon and a high of 50. I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans for 1490 WGCH.
This is the Wall Street Journal Report. I'm Jennifer Kishinka. Jobless claims rose to the highest level in 5 weeks, climbing by 8,000 in the latest week. An increase of 2,000 was expected. The four-week average, which smooths out season quirks, rose by a scant 250 to 355,000. LaSalle Economics Vincent Malanga sees no real cause for concern.
On balance, the labor market recovery has been tepid at best. The hope is that we're starting to build some momentum now to the upside so that we'll get more noticeable improvements in the labor market as we move forward.
Words of warning from a congressional panel. China almost certainly would mount a cyber attack on the U.S. in the event of a conflict. And the U.S. has no clear policy to determine how to respond appropriately. The report finds that the U.S. telecommunications supply chain is especially vulnerable to cyber tampering, and an attack could result in a catastrophic failure of critical infrastructure. Futures are higher. This is the Wall Street Journal Report.
If you have gout, listen closely. That's the sound of gout silently attacking joints between flares. You won't hear it, and you may not feel it, but if your uric acid level remains high, crystals can continue to build up in your joints. Over time, this may lead to attacks in other joints, constant pain, and joint destruction. So don't wait. For more information, go to goutinfo.com and talk with your doctor about ways to keep your uric acid at a lower, healthy level.
Hi, Rick. Hey, Phil. I need a new putter.
Oh, sure. They're on sale.
Yeah, I know. I read your email newsletter.
So how you hitting them?
Shot a 79 yesterday.
Oh, fabulous. You must be reading my newsletter tips.
79 over par.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you want to look at some drivers, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Email marketing from Constant Contact helps you create professional newsletters that really drive business. It's easy, and plans are as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial. ConstantContact.com.
4!
It happens on just about every flight. The plane's door closes, and it's time to turn off personal electronics devices. But the journalist Scott McCartney says there's always at least one person who keeps talking, texting, tweeting, playing, watching, or emailing, and ignoring stern orders to power down.
Flight attendants say this is the number one issue they face. On almost every flight, there's somebody who doesn't turn off their phone, Kindle, iPad, game player, whatever it would be, and it ends up often in a confrontation.
Studies show interference from electronic devices is possible, especially...